Welcome to Coach, the professional coaching podcast. Conversations to explore what coaching is really all about, what it takes to be a great coach, and why coach training really does make the difference. Discover how coaching can help you in all areas of your life and business in a fast-paced and demanding world. So join us here to share conversations and insights with some of the best coaches from around the globe. Real coaches, real talk. So let's get started with me, your host, Teresa Brooks.
Hello to everybody. Thank you for joining another episode of Coach, the Professional Coaching Podcast with me, your host, Teresa Brooks. And today I'm really excited to welcome back somebody who we were trying to ascertain when we actually last spoke to each other. And we agreed that there's been about a 2-year weird gap for everyone where we might, when did I last speak to you? Of course, with the pandemic and everything in between, we agreed that it was about 2 years ago. But I'd like to welcome my guest, Raghav Prakash, and he is an executive life coach. He featured in Coach in 2019, where we talked about how to access your zone of genius. Now, that one never gets old, of course, and we all want to know how to do that. But today we're going to explore a few different subjects. We're going to meander along and see really, you know, why leaders need coaches and what that really means. So welcome to the show, Raghav. It's lovely to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be back here again since we last spoke about the magazine.
Indeed. And of course, I like to have a little pre-chat with everybody that comes onto the podcast. And then I have to remind myself we're not actually recording. So we did cover quite a few juicy bits, but it got us in the mood for the podcast. And I'm excited to have you here. And let's kick off straight into what you do and what you believe in, because you've got a few passions. And of course, as a coach, you know, your passions lead you, but you lead leaders. So tell us a little bit about what you do in leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. So my passion, ever since I became a coach, has always been answering one question. You know, what is it that allows people to really perform at the best? You know, what really allows someone, regardless of what walk of life they come from, to maximize their performance? And I've been really privileged from where I started to coach a variety of different people, but they all have one thing in common. They're really ambitious. They're really driven, you know, all the way through from leaders who work in, you know, typical corporate workplace, you know, all the way through to mums that have actually come to me and said, Raghav, I don't know if I fit within your typical clientele, because I know you work with a lot of leaders and entrepreneurs, but I just want to be a really great mum. Can you help me with that? And I found that really profound, because it's, you know, there's such a knowing about what they really want, you know, what's true to them. And, you know, of course, over time, my coaching's evolved a lot, but my passion now is my main core audience I work with are people that are leaders in the workplace and occasionally entrepreneurs. Because what I typically find is that, you know, they've got so much to give. They've got such an impact they want to make in the world. And as they start performing at their best, often what then happens isn't some sort of material success, which is often great, but then it's really changing the lives of so many other people around them. That's what really inspires me about leaders. That leaders aren't just, you know, C-suite or directors. It's people outside of the workplace that are making a difference, people in communities as well. But if you speak to any leader and you ask them, what inspires you? There's always something that is so rich, that's core to their mission, that if you can help them unleash it, it just makes the world a better place, makes society a better place. And it's something I'm really excited by through all the conversations I have with my clients.
Absolutely. And there's three things that you said in there that I've picked out and heard there about leaders. And it's important, I think, for us all to consider, where are these things within us? Because we're all leading, you know, we're leading ourselves. And so first of all, having a passion, like a real passion for something, you really actually care. The second thing she said, they want to be really good at it, whether it's parenting or leading the country. I want to be good at it. You know, I don't want to just give it a go. And the third thing that I heard there was they want to create impact, you know, not just about themselves, but for other people. And of course, that's the very essence of a leader, is that they are leading other people. But that's exciting, really, I think, because we can all, in any walk of life, certainly as coaches, as mums, as, you know, fathers, brothers, whatever we are, we can find leadership within ourselves. So let's talk about the difference a little bit. I'd love to know your opinion on the difference between kind of leaders and followers. You know, because we kind of get this divide, really, where sometimes people will follow blindly. And we were just talking before the podcast about guru status, that kind of thing. Let's just explore that a little bit. What do you think about the kind of guru leaders and where the followers come in?
Yeah, so, you know, guru leaders, I never... So, you know, there's the concept of gurus, which I just don't buy into. I just don't think is... Okay, so through a lot of the work I've done as a coach, just to give the short context and background, I first came into coaching from a performance point of view. But now, what I find behind performance is that what really helps people perform aren't just surface level tactics, but finding out what is really going on in the mind, what's really going on in their psyche. And often there's things like trauma and so much more that's driving, you know, driving what they do. So when I look at guru leaders, for me, I think there's a lot of insecurity and trauma driving that, that has them necessarily have to be a guru, you know, that has them have to be so much in the public eye where the people they want to serve, it no longer becomes about them. It becomes about being a guru, being loved, being seen. There's a big level of, you know, significance that's missing from their life, big amount of insecurity, a lack of self-love, and they need that from other people. So then you get that type of leader, and then you get the leaders who lead without a title. So people like that, people like yourself, Teresa, people who have found a mission or something they really love in their life, and they just want to go at it. They want to do it because it's, you know, I know we spoke about genius as well. It's basically so intuitive that it just lights them up. It just really excites them. Like, I know we touched on some of my political stuff that I'm doing as well. And people often ask me, who are coaches, they'll say, you know, why do you want to go into politics? What's your why? And I have some rational thoughts, but a big part of it is the heart just wants what it wants. And what I see when I look at politics is what it could be. I haven't even decided.
Potential.
The potential. I don't even know what that is yet, but there's just something inside of me that says, you know what? This could be something really amazing. Like, this could be a vehicle for incredible change. And someone might call that being a leader. I just call that being a good human being, you know, looking at the world around you, being an entrepreneur, thinking, what can I make better? What can I solve? What can I do that's going to make a difference in people's lives? And then committing yourself to that cause. And that's been a journey for me, because when I came to the industry, I surrounded myself with a lot of gurus thinking that's what you had to be. And then I tried to do all that. And I thought, it doesn't really make sense. I don't feel fulfilled. And what really excites me is just slowing myself down and thinking, actually, how can I be more behind the scenes of my clients' lives to help them go on and do great things in the world? That seems a lot more exciting to me.
And so, of course, then, you know, stepping into the role of coach also as a leader. But it's interesting you mentioned that leaders without a title. And so to me, that's self-leadership. And that's, like you say, your mission and things that you will bring to fruition that you just love, that you're just passionate about. Like what we're doing here on being on my podcast, magazine, that is not where I make my money, but that is where my passion is. I do it because it lights me up. Otherwise it would be exhausting, right? So I have to lead myself in a good way so that I can do everything that I love. And so, you know, that's interesting, leaders without a title. And I'm sure people listening will think, I wonder if I am a leader without a title, without that formal tag that says, you know, I am steering this particular ship. Obviously, you know, you work with a lot of people in corporate, and you've got a variety of clients, entrepreneurs, and certainly in corporate, people have got lots of titles and labels. There's a hierarchy. There's a whole culture there. But when you're leading without a title, I think that's a really interesting place to look at. And also, you talked about politics, and although we could be here all day if we delve too deeply into that, I think, you know, I'd be really interested to hear you share some of your thoughts about the political landscape and coaching and that culture, because that was something we were just talking about there, really, as to whether that landscape is the arena that's ready for true coaching that could bring real change. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. You know, it comes back to what I mentioned about, you know, leadership without title, because, and someone might get confused thinking, well, you work with leaders who have a title. I do, but here's the thing. What has them be a leader isn't their title. It's who they are at the core. It's where they come from. Like, one of my favorite quotes is, success is not about where we go to, but about where we come from. Like, where are we living from each day? And every single one of my clients, they ask themselves the question, who am I being today? Who am I being? And often they come up with answers such as, you know, I want to be loved for my loved ones. I want to be focused. I want to be commitment. I want to be integrity. That's personal leadership. Now, when you apply that to a CEO role, a director role, then you create magic. because you are being the leader. And when I look at the political space, it's such an interesting landscape, because why it's good and bad. Like, I actually have more empathy for politicians than I do anger and frustration at the dark side of it, because we're in a world where, for some reason, someone at the beginning, just in the political world, has said, you know what, you need to be perfect. You need to come across perfect. I don't know who started that thought, but when you look in Parliament, everyone seems to have that thinking now. Everyone acts as robots. You know, I think Nick Clegg once said, to everyone in Parliament is a robot or none a monk or a robot. That's the only way you survive. You've got to be very, like, very neutral.
And they don't always manage that, do they?
Yeah, sadly they don't. And you see, what people love is humanity. Like, what people love is, like, when, for example, the former Prime Minister Theresa May was resigning, she cried and she showed emotion. People said, that's brilliant, but why are you doing it so late?
Like, why we liked her the most then, didn't we? We were like, oh, there she is.
Yeah, I agree. And I was once listening to a speech by, again, so I'm not going to, I wouldn't say who, but it's someone in, because it wouldn't be nice of me saying this, but it's someone who's quite influential within, let's say, the House of Commons. And at the end of the conference, everyone was clapping their hands, saying, you know, it's brilliant. What an amazing speech. And I said, sure, that person came across confident, but I don't know who they are. I heard that speech. I didn't sense who they are. Like, sure, delivered well, orated well, spoke well, but I can't see their humanity. I can't see the person, the character. I don't know who they are. And that's because the culture in Parliament right now, how it's been created, and because of the amount of abuse people get, MPs get, especially on social media, there's this culture that's created where you can't show humanity and you need to be perfect. But because they're bottling things up so much, it's like getting a glass bottle, pouring hot water into it, then putting a cork on the top. If the cork doesn't fly open and burst open, the glass is just going to shatter. And that's why you get people who are MPs who've got such big mental health problems. So it's a cycle that just keeps repeating itself, and it's toxic. And it's why we get the decisions we do in government, because people aren't learning to manage themselves. And there's fear, and there's and that's the culture that you have. You can't really be yourself. You can't have a growth mindset. You can't be open because you have fear of being attacked. So it's not a nice place to be.
It's incredibly lack, isn't it? You know, that fear that they have, if I show who I am, I might lose my job. You know, if I show who I am, then I'll be seen as weak. People won't think I'm a good leader. And yet you listen to a speech that's delivered beautifully. Well, great. We all enjoyed that. Such clarity of speaking. But, you know, hearing the words, but not hearing the person, not feeling the person, not relating to anything, because it's all just the front. You know, you gave the sort of metaphor of them sort of being in a box protected and just speaking. I mean, puppetry comes to mind, to be honest, because what does it feel like to go home as that kind of leader and realize that you have just said what you've got to say, done what you've got to do, but you're feeling so low and so negative that you drink or you argue with your partner or whatever it is that you might do. And of course, that mental health really builds up and piles up, just like that, the bottle and the water. Yep. And then thinking that we are having decisions made by people in that state, and this is not judgment, this is just observation, really worries me. And yet, do you think that there is an inroad to bringing coaching and mentoring in the way that you and I understand it to the political landscape?
You know, I'm working on that. And it's something I say I'm working on, because I've been working on that for the last few years. And what I'm seeing, especially in just across leadership, is that you get two types of leaders, one with a growth mindset, a contribution mindset. And when you have that thinking, like one of my clients of mine, he's launched his second book now. And when I was at his first book launch, he was you know, giving thanks to certain people. He very kindly acknowledged me, and I'm very humbled by that. And all his family said, but why do you need a coach? You're so successful. You're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you. Why do you need a coach? And he said, well, no, it's because I'm so successful, I have a coach. Because what RAG does, he helps me get more out of myself than I can by myself. It's the same reason you have a personal trainer, et cetera, et cetera. And with leaders, there is this fear that actually, if I have a coach, am I seen as weak? Or do I trust someone enough to share my deepest, darker secrets? and all the things that I don't want other people to know about me. There's that going on. Now, that exists just within leadership, outside of parliament. In parliament, imagine you take that and times it by five, because the insecurity is even more. That is, it's a bubble. That's why they call it the Westminster bubble, because no one knows what goes in. No one knows what comes out. No one knows what really happens. It's so much secrecy going on that for me to coach an MP, that have to be very forward thinking. So what I'm hoping is that younger generation MPs coming in, like myself and many others, they have that mindset. And I'm going to be reaching out to them saying, look, this is what I do. Can I help you maximize more of what you do? And they'll get it. But it does take courage to be coached. It really does. And in that environment, I'm still working on it, put it that way.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a great job. And of course, you know, yes, it does take courage to be coached, but it also takes courage to tread where no one really has trodden before. And as you go forward, and like you say, with your mindset and gathering even just one, two, three people that feel the same way, that's how you can create impact. Like we were speaking before the podcast, that these incremental moves, these incremental changes are huge on impact and on the ripple effect. If you just keep going, it's like building a business, or, you know, turning a tank on its, you know, course at sea. It doesn't happen suddenly. So it sounds like you are on track, and certainly I can hear your passion in that as well. One thing you touched on there really is like emotional intelligence, because to think, oh, what if I tell someone and they think I'm weak? And, you know, I said that a few minutes ago, but it's like to think that thinking is in leadership, so they don't realize that they've got such strength in that. And of course, the person that you were coaching does realize that. So what's the difference between the person you were coaching in that sphere and anyone else that doesn't feel the same way in that same circle? What do you see that difference as?
Yeah, I think it's breaking the stigma. I think it's really the stigma. So you see, when you look at, again, the political world, every single person around you is basically holding their cards to their chest. You know, everyone is acting in such a sort of uptight, sort of stiff manner, because they just don't want to show any character and emotion. They have to be seen as strong. And again, I think the reason being is that when you look at the political space, MPs are attacked so frequently on social media. You know, one wrong move, like you can even make a good, you can, for example, say, I'm going to cut taxes by whatever. Great. But you're going to then find people will attack a certain MP for doing that. So there's nothing you can do that won't go unattacked. So I think firstly, it's when, if I look at it from the broader sense, in the world we face, fortunately, we're not used to so much criticism. You know, when we make an act or a move, we're not going to face such a backlash. So really, there's a big detachment from what people think. That's the first one. Someone that's got coaching and has coaching, they're really comfortable with their thoughts about what other people think of them. They don't see that as relevant. They can live their life without the prejudices. Because again, so many of my family, coming from an Indian background, they didn't quite get it. But for me, I saw the value in coaching. That's why I've always been coached. That's why I got into coaching. Because this is my truth. This is my intuition. So it's knowing and following your gut, which is the first, you know, first port call. And that's a sign of a great decision maker, that you know what's important to you. And secondly, it's the second thing about getting help is that it's not really of anyone's fault that coaching only now is becoming more mainstream in the UK. In the past, there never used to be a thing. You know, what we have typically is therapy and counseling, psychotherapy. And most people associate that with, you know, needing to deal with trauma, needing to deal with anxiety. So they have an association of, I go there when I have a problem. Still, I don't agree with that. You can go there because you want to be better. You want to maximize yourself. So I think it's just time. In time, that stigma will drop.
It's really interesting. And you kind of alluded there as well about their confidence to make their decisions. And of course, that makes me think of obviously like values leadership, and where they're going to be steering from in the core of them. So if someone says, I don't agree with that, well, that's still okay. And I think, again, as the kind of political leaders, you know, it's like, who's saying they have to be strong? Where do you think that message is coming from, that they have to be right and strong and stoic? And almost, it's got this really old-fashioned vibe. Do you think this is just an inherited belief that they've got? Or do you think there's still actual people driving that, saying this is how you need to be?
I think it's both. Number one, it's inherited. It's a culture. So culture isn't actually a thing. It's just a representation of people within a space.
And what they believe. Yeah.
That's all culture is. Culture isn't, like, if you got rid of all MPs and I went into parliament, there wouldn't be any culture. It'd be non-existent. So culture is just a reflection of the people in there. So is the mindsets. Like, if you look at any government, typically when they make any mistake, they're not going to come out and say, we're sorry, unless it's going to help their votes. Then it's a PR stunt. But you see, they won't ever say, okay, we got this wrong. We're sorry. They won't ever do that. Any government from any party. So there's this constant, you know, filibustering. There's this constant, just, you know, blustering away through, not answering the question, being avoidant. You know, that's what we used to see in politics. So that culture, again, shows that you just can't be straight with people. That's the message it reinforces in your subconscious mind, a lack of integrity. The second aspect is, again, they have so many PR people around them constantly. So many PR people from all walks of life in any party. There are people that say, okay, now you want to say this, now you want to say that. And that would really annoy me, because when I speak, I just speak from what I feel is truth. And I speak from the heart. I don't like writing speeches. Every time I do a seminar, I make it up as I go along. I literally don't have an agenda. I just turn up. I say to my audience, what do you want to get from this weekend? Great, let's talk about this. I just go natural. Whereas if I were to write a political speech, I'd have people say, no, you can't say this, you can't say that. This word means this, this word. And it's so, you know, robotized. It's so formulaic.
Well, it's very designed, isn't it? It's highly designed. It's highly targeted. It's got a purpose behind it. And it's not about speaking from the heart. So that's not the purpose of that speech. And they might say, well, okay, we'll put a little bit of that in, but it's not going to be much. And then, of course, PR is about, well, getting the public to love you. And how do we do that? And then you talked about culture, which is built on what's important to people and what they believe in. So if you believe what I believe and I believe what you believe, you and I are creating a culture. And then if somebody else comes and they believe that too, then there's three of us, four, 24, 50, you know, and that's how that culture is built, because we all have the same values and we believe the same thing. You're right. If we clear the decks, you took them all out, put fresh people in, you could rebuild that culture from scratch. So that's a really interesting thing to think about, because it shows so much how they are really embedded in that culture. Within the culture is all the beliefs, which are really just mapped on systems from the past people and the past people and the past people. So it's a whole puppetry system in many ways. And yet, let's just think about this, because there's a notion there of being right and being wrong. And that's the problem as well, isn't it? There's no exploration. And because people will follow you or you or you in this country, or you or you in America, it has to be like that. So it's a very difficult landscape to navigate. It doesn't serve well to see the other party's perspective or start exploring things in that way. So surely that must lead to that very rigid thinking in their own minds, that they can't possibly see it another way. It must be like this. And so therefore, to me, and tell me what you think, leaves them a little uncoachable.
Yeah, no, it does. That's really true, because, you know, how you do one thing is how you do another. And I think when you spend so long in the political bubble, this is what's actually quite dangerous, that you've had people that are sort of career politicians. They started off their career in parliament. They're going to be in parliament for, you know, the whole life. I just think the amount of growth that you have is so limited. And what happens to your brain and its functions and its cognitive functions is that they begin to decline. You know, like, as a sort of offshoot to this conversation, I've always been inspired by my granddaddy, passed away years ago, but to the day he died, his mind was so sharp, because every day he did Sudokus, every day he did stuff in his old age to push his mind, to grow his mind, to strengthen his thinking. And what happens is, if he gets so relaxed and you're used to, oh, I'm not going to lose my seat in parliament, which is, again, is sad, because there are some things as safe seats in the country, meaning MPs don't have to push hard. So they're very relaxed. They rest on their laurels, and you just don't see anything from any other perspective. It's just so dangerous. Like, this is why I love getting coached, because I get to see all the blind spots. I get to see where my comfort zone is. I get to see how I'm not pushing against my comfort zone. I get to see how I'm holding myself back. That is what life is about. It's about who you're becoming. It's not about what you do. It's about who you're being, the growth that happens. And that's what life is for me. The whole journey is the process. And if you don't have that level of thinking, you're just missing out on what it means to be alive.
Exactly, you are. You're so right. You've hit the nail on the head. And of course, I love what you've said there about, you know, I've just written down here the comfortable MP seat. So you've got the spot, and this we could, you know, apply this to anything. It could be in our businesses, in our lives, in our relationships. It doesn't matter. We're using this really as a whole metaphor. But, you know, you've got the comfortable MP seat. I don't want to lose my slot. It's a good question, isn't it, to ask ourselves, you know, where's my comfortable MP seat? You know, where do I sit in where I don't really want to lose this spot? I don't want to push myself, you know, because that really is a comfort zone, isn't it? And we know that nothing really happens much there. So then we get this like sluggish leadership.
I agree.
And you can see it panning out. But let's flip the conversation, because I would love you to tell me, who do you think is an inspiring political leader? Let's get the other side of this.
An aspiring political leader. As tempted as I am to go to someone in the UK, because I know it's going to be very controversial, I'm going to go abroad and I'm going to say Jacinda Ardern. Now, I'm going to be honest when I say this. I don't know. When I don't know things, I put my hands up and say, I actually don't know what I'm talking about when I don't know something. I don't know New Zealand's policy in a number of sense. I haven't studied their policy a lot. She could be making bad political moves, but which I doubt, but what I see in someone like Jacinda Ardern is character. I see who she is. You know, another one in the US is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, again, I don't necessarily agree with her political views all the time, but again, it's the character, it's who she is there's a humanity that's coming through. And why I like Jacinda Ardern is, as a classic example, when there was an attack on the mosque, you know, what she did was she went and wore like a head cover. And she went and hugged the different, you know, victims and who had lost family members. And she was emotional and she was crying and she showed tears and she shows humanity. And she's just a person. That she's just a person at the front with a great vision of what it means to be in government, to be a servant of the public. That's what being an MP is, a servant of the public. Sadly, how we have it today is they feel like they're being served by the public. You see, there's been a bit of a flip.
And everything in between.
Yeah,
it's like it's so ambiguous. And I think, you know, a key thing that you've talked about, that I also love her. And I think, you know, she really rose, didn't she? Well, into my vision in 2020. And her leadership skills there were, well, they were faultless and they were simple. But what they were full of was empathy.
Yeah,
there was empathy there, but there was strength, you know, and there was courage as well. And then when she, you know, visited after you talking about the situation with the mosque, and she visited them again, empathy. She went and walked with them,
yeah,
you know, during their pain, during their difficult time. And this is what you can then relate to, you know, because like you say, it's that human element. But we also need someone that can make those strong decisions, also need someone that can be courageous to do that, be confident to do that, but still have empathy.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult balance. And I don't see a lot in our set, to be honest. I don't see a lot of empathy. I don't see a lot of emotional intelligence. I don't see a lot of self-awareness. A lot of people will find it acutely awkward to listen to watch. I say a lot, not everyone, of course. But yeah, she is really amazing. So that brings me to the question. I'm going to ask it. Do you think that female leaders find it easier or more natural in any shape or form, what that might mean to you, to lean into empathy?
That's a really good question. I don't think I've ever been asked that before, but I think it's a brilliant question. I would say yes, because of what I understand, and I could be talking nonsense here. So if I am, then of course someone will correct me at some point. But I think based on how men and women process emotions, I think absolutely. You know, one of the big things I work on with my clients is imposter syndrome. And, you know, I do a monthly workshop on this and I talk a lot because it's such a big obstacle to so many of my clients. Now, whenever I run the workshop, one of the biggest myths I debunk, which people find really fascinating, is there's this myth that, oh, women experience imposter syndrome more than men. That's not true. A landmark case study showed that actually 52% of people who are women experience it, 48% of men. So men, it's just slightly less. But the thing is, it's equal. Now, why we have this myth is because men process emotions differently to women. what men do is we tend to just bury our emotions. We tend to, you know, think we shouldn't be feeling this. It's what toxic masculinity is. It's a big thing in the workplace where, you know, male leaders are creating a culture where it's very toxic, because toxic masculinity. You need to push through. You need to work long hours. You shouldn't be thinking about your emotions. You know, like, I've heard stories where people have gone to their bosses and they've said, I'm stressed. And the boss says, fix it or find another job. You know, it's very toxic. And, you know, because of that, I think women are more comfortable with what they feel. They don't have the stigma, because in all cartoons and all movies, it's the male superhero that comes along and saves the day. So men have this thing in their mind where they need to be strong, confident, masculine, the provider, you know, the alpha male, whatever that sort of story is they have in their mind. So I think with women, there isn't such a pressure of that. They have different pressures, of course, which is fighting for their place and equal pay in a very male-dominated environment, which is a challenge of its own, of course. But I just think women are more in tune with what they feel. Also, women mature faster than men. So there's biological factors, psychological factors. So I would say, yeah, absolutely. Like, I would agree with what you said.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting conversation. And there's about 10 other ones within that as well, of course, that we've just touched on. But again, you know, when I said to you, do you think they find it easier to lean into empathy? The essence of your answer is yes, which is, you know, obviously highlighting the fact that by default, men don't find it easier to lean into empathy. So there's a really good question there about what men think empathy is. And potentially they may feel that that shows a weakness. And again, we're going backward now, we're going in a circle, aren't we? And you can see that circular thinking. And you're right, there has been this, and it is an old fashioned, so I'm going to say old fashioned notion, that this is how men need to be, and that we are the princesses and that they are the kings and the heroes. But the thing is, we're talking about leadership. Okay, so how can we be the kings and the queens in our own lives, in our own leadership? And at the core of that is emotional intelligence. At the core of that is how we feel. And so men just don't have the space as leaders, especially as leaders, to find, even to find and unearth their emotions, let alone process them. And are they going to start doing that with a coach embedded in this deep culture? Probably not, but maybe. There's a chance that they might, but sadly, I think, right, there's a chance that they might when things get really bad. And this is what we see, complete breakdown in leaders, you know, like you say, addictions, problems, things going on behind the scenes whilst trying to steer a ship, lead a nation. It's not healthy. I think it's really quite toxic. And I also think that the true alpha male is a very evolved being. And not this old fashioned view that we have of, you know, alpha like that. Then, of course, you've got women who then believe that as well to some extent. And like you said, rightly, they're in corporates or in leadership roles and they feel like they're fighting for their wage, for their position, for their voice. And so maybe they try and take on more of that and then they start to lose their empathy. And it's just a big, difficult area. And so how can coaching not be needed in that space? It makes me feel a little frustrated as I'm speaking, as I'm listening to you. How can such leaders in our spaces not want or desire coaches?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what it comes down to for me in this, about this, is just, I think there's such a stigma about what we think. Like, when I coach a lot of men, especially, the challenge for them mainly is accepting what they're going through. Now, they really hate it so much to the point that that's where a lot of the problems come from.
Mm.
Like, when you can just let them, or just for someone to have the thought, the realization that actually it's not a bad thing to feel anxious sometimes. It's not a bad thing to sometimes doubt myself. It's not a bad thing that my mind is just, you know, having a bit of a circus. It's just,
I think they just don't know where to take that so that it then becomes actually useful, because there's nothing wrong in essence with feeling anxious. It's a symptom of something else going on. So it's almost like, how can we explore, like you said, I feel anxious sometimes. Okay, so that's not all the time, so that's a good thing. So what's happening when you do feel anxious? Let's look at that. So of course they don't have these self-coaching techniques within them, but they're perhaps repelling the people that could help, because they're like, oh no, I can't let you in because it's too scary, it's too difficult, I'm going, no. So, you know, how do we change that? really, I suppose it's by conversation, but you know, you're very bravely going into the political landscape and you're taking your steps in there to see what you've done. And you've already seen people impacting, haven't you? You were talking to me about a couple of people that you quite admire from the Liberal Democrat Party. Yep. Do you want to just share that? Because I thought that was quite interesting, because that's change.
Yeah, definitely. So, I love studying people across the board. Like, even though I have my political affiliation, I'm quite neutral in the sense that I respect people for who they are and what they do, without doubt. You know, I'm not biased. And, you know, I look at, especially, you know, why I mentioned the Liberal Democrats. So you've got a few people like, you know, Daisy Cooper, who recently on a presentation, it was like a sort of, it was a meeting, a special meeting for activists in the party. You know, she was talking about imposter syndrome because someone asked her, do you have imposter syndrome? And she said, yeah, I go through it. And it's so refreshing to hear people talk about that. You know, you see other people like, you know, Leila Moran talk about the challenges she's gone through as someone from the LGBTQ community, being an MP. And people make such a big deal of her sexual orientation. You know, all of this takes character and courage, you know, to talk about the human aspect of what's going on behind the scenes. And you see where that comes from. When you talk about empathy, where that comes from, in my opinion, is one thing, a comfort with yourself, like a full comfort. An exploration of your own emotions, because when you can do that, you're so much more relaxed and present. And guess what? When you're with someone else, you can fully hear them and be with them. People without empathy, they have that ability within, but they haven't accessed it because they haven't done the work. You know, they haven't.
What's just come up for me there is, how could you possibly empathize with someone else if you don't empathize with yourself?
Yeah.
So if you don't understand your own emotions, someone can describe something to you, but you're unable to access the empathy for them and feel it with them because you're so limited in our ignorance over on the other side. And of course, we're never going to be done with this work. We're never, ever going to do that. So I love what you say about every day. You know, how do I show up today? Because you know what? Some days are not all roses, are they? Let's be honest. You know, some days are difficult. Some days are earmarked for pain, for challenge. And it's like, if you can get through that and come out the other side as well in a healthy way, that's good leadership. That's good self-leadership. If you're going to go down the rabbit holes and never come out and everything's going to pile up, that's not. But we need that direction. I think we're all leaders. I think it's the most important thing. But the ones that are leading other people, they need to rise up as leaders, in my humble opinion. And they need to get on board, really, with the way that the world is moving. In terms of, it's demanding empathy, it's demanding understanding, it's demanding that we can process our emotions, that we can understand about mental health, because it's getting bad out there. I'm sorry, I don't see it getting better. In pockets, it's getting fabulous. But if we look at the world in general, wouldn't you say that it's crying out for this?
Across the board. Absolutely, across the board, especially now. Because of what's happened with COVID. And when I think of what COVID has done to society, COVID, in my opinion, is a catalyst. It's an accelerator. It's accelerated all the problems we have in society by 10. So as an example, one of my clients who's very successful in business says, look, all the businesses that have collapsed, they were going to collapse at some point, but now that's accelerated the process. All the, let's say the retail stores that are closing, they were going to close at some point. And, you know, maybe not. I don't fully agree with it, but everything has been accelerated. So right now, people's problems have been accelerated. Uncertainty has been accelerated. Emotions have been accelerated. You know, 52% of leaders across the world and across Europe, during the pandemic, doubt their ability to lead. So what this is about is having courage to go, you know what? I haven't got the answers. I haven't got it figured out. And I see one leader on LinkedIn doing this all the time. And I call him out and I admire him. I say, you're amazing for doing this. He says, look, I just found out about this article and this term called winging it. I feel like I've been winging it for so long and I used to beat myself up, but actually I realized it's so common. And he came out and said that, and a lot of his staff and other people in the company said, that's amazing. You know what? I've been doing this as well and I feel really bad for you, but you've inspired me. So he's led from the front saying, look, I don't have all the answers, but that's okay. We can figure this out.
And you sometimes don't need all I wing it.
Yeah. And yeah. That's what I think I do, by the way. People say, Rag, you're so confident. I go, no, I just look okay, knowing, you know, not knowing what I'm doing. That's what you see.
That's brilliant, Rag. I just look okay, not knowing what I'm doing. And I know exactly what you mean. I know what you're getting at, because, you know, we may be a little kinder than winging it and say that, you know, you're intuitive and that you're well, and that you're well led and that you've got integrity, you know. And I think, you know, anyone that thinks, God, I've been winging that, actually needs to give themselves a tap on the back, a pat on the back. Because within the winging it zone, you have demonstrated a lot of skills, okay, that mean you're still holding tight to where you are. And of course, even the very fact that we might say, gosh, I think I've been winging that a bit, that's given us a whole new area to look at. Like, how can I not wing it? What does winging it look like? When is winging it actually useful for me, you know? And so it's really exciting, but you're right. COVID has accelerated, but also intensified. Yeah. So it's sped everything up, but also I think it has almost been like, if you think of being, you know, pressured under pressure, which is what we've been, and you think of what comes out under pressure, there's been a lot of leakage. There's been a lot of things that have been really buried and suppressed that have kind of come out during the pressure. You know, a lot of people's relationships have finished, marriages have ended, businesses have ended. You know, sadly, a lot of things have come to an end, but endings can only inspire new beginnings ultimately. But I do think that, you know, I wonder why there's so much help with mental health. There's so many coaches, but still not enough coaches for everybody, to be honest. Why is there still such sufferance? You know, why is the mental health pandemic growing? Why are so many people suffering, but everyone is actually pretending that they're not? I say everyone, huge generalization, you know, a lot of people pretending they're not, and they're sitting in these roles almost waiting to combust, you know. And that might sound negative, but it's not negative, it's just an observation listening to you. And
I think the answer, it sounds like a complex problem, but in a way I think the answer is really simple. I look at social media now. I don't blame social media, I blame how we use social media. That everywhere you look, there's such a, let's say, a foundation of insecurity that is leading people to use social media in a way that, you know, that they do. Like, you go on Instagram and you see people posing in front of jets, in front of cars, false lifestyle, this, that, the other. There's masses and masses of insecurity going on. And it's to showcase the life that you really want people to see you as. You know, I had someone reach out to me and they were saying, Rag, look, I'm struggling with this, and I don't know if I can put food on the table, and, you know, I don't know where I'm going to live. And I was trying to give them some help, and bless them, they'd gone through a tough time. The next thing I know, I see the same person who is, you know, modeling herself in front of a pool, sunglasses, with all these motivational quotes and success, and saying, I can do it, you can too, my portfolio is doing this. And I just think that is such an incongruent thing. Now, people aren't necessarily that extreme, don't get me wrong, but what you see on social media is a lot of the pressure of who you think you need to be. And that's where people go wrong, because they're
living. I think it's starting to turn. Do you think it's starting to turn? Because I think anyone listening to this, and certainly in you know, my community and the world that you and I operate in, we are aware of this. I think we have a high awareness around this and that piece around integrity and, of course, the shiny showreels. But you can just imagine, social media is nothing. It's not a thing. It's not a thing. If we all stop using it, it'll be dead. It wouldn't exist. And so it's us, it's the humans always that are driving, it's our behaviours. And so it's almost like this, it's this portal, isn't it, to show up on, to process everything through, to direct everything through. And when you see it in a negative way like that, because there's also some incredibly positive, powerful parts of social media that I just love, then you look at it and you're like, wow, this is a real... These are people playing out their feelings, people playing out their insecurities, but also trying to attain and trying to succeed at the same time. And I see a lot of that as well. And yet what we're actually talking about, if we dig beneath, is we're saying we want people to be real. We want the people that we work with, that we coach with, that we connect with, that we see in communities. We want them to just be real people, because that's inspiring. And if they can lead themselves through a really tricky time, maybe so can I. But if you keep seeing people buy jets and, you know, all that kind of stuff, you're like, well, the gap feels so big. But in your example, the gap's the other way. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And so that really is the scary thing. So it's like, And then again, I just think it brings it straight back to the beginning. How are we going to lead ourselves in that case? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, the answer is, and it's, I was just, in fact, I was listening to something by Sarah Blakely yesterday, and I love what she talks about, which is having your own space to get your own ideas and thinking. And it's a new ritual I'm going to do this week, which is really shutting myself away from social media, and at least for a couple hours a day, and just having space literally to do nothing, but just to think, and let's see what ideas come up to me around my business, my life, and more. Because it's such an amazing space to be in. But I find that that's the key for me, that if everyone for a week had no access to social media, what would happen is people start listening to their intuition more, which is a really
good distraction. It's a huge distraction for the fact that we're not processing our emotions well. And of course, space is something that we're like, well, I haven't got time. Can't give myself any space. Well, I've got so many things to do, so much to achieve. Do. Yep. And of course, we're not sitting there and taking that delicious 2 hours where then things can start to drop in. That's one of the things I encourage all my clients to do, is find that space, find that meditational time. It doesn't mean sitting cross-legged if it's not your bag. Do you know what I mean? My meditation every day is a 90-minute walk. And, you know, come hell or high water, that's my space. Do I have time to walk for 90 minutes? You could easily argue not. But do I have time not to? No, because I know what the impact is if I start getting too crammed down and I don't get that space. So I think that's really important what you've raised there. And obviously, if you're encouraging the leaders that you're working with to find that space, miracles can happen. Do they respond well to that?
You know, that they do, because when you point people towards something that's true, they start to really experience it in their own life. They really start experiencing it. Like even just through basic coaching questions, when, you know, I'm working with a leader who says, look, I have a lot on my mind, I'm doing this. And I say, well, what's the impact of that? They say, well, yeah, I just feel more stressed. And the dots start connecting that actually, the more I tend to have in my mind, the more busy I tend to be, then actually my productivity goes down, my stress goes up, and my creativity goes down. So they start realizing this just through the work I do. And the more I kind of like point them towards it, which is, you know, really seeing what happens when we just, whether it's practicing mindfulness, what happens when we just like let that go and just be in the present? What happens? And in the session, it starts slowing down and experiencing, and it feels so good. And it's just like, yeah, I need to be doing this more. Mm. Like it really just strikes them. And it's so easy and it's so effortless, because what I'm not doing is sharing them with them an ideology. I'm not sharing them what I think I should do. I'm just expressing what I see true about the world and true about performance. The less we have on our mind, the more relaxed we are, the better we perform in any field. And when people taste it, they see it so fully for themselves in their own flavor.
Mm. And of course, we all can resist a little of being told, can't we? So okay, it's that invitation to find that space, to find that little bit of peace, see what drops in, and then let's have a look at that. Because you know as well as I do, and everyone listening here, that you'll get some of your best ideas, sometimes even in a dream. For me, I actually dream things up. And I'm like, wow, where's my pen when I wake up? Other times it can be when I'm walking. Other times it can be just when I'm just sitting, maybe watching a bit of absolute nonsense. And I'm like, oh. And so space can be found in lots of different ways. We don't have to carve out hours a day, but it's really, really important. And of course, once you see the benefit of it, well, there's no stopping them then, is there really? And so if you can take some of your mission, some of your passion, some of your incredible insights and talents into the political landscape, into the spaces when leaders need it, I know you are, and I'm sure you will continue to be incredibly well received. And I hope that this podcast has enabled people to think about how they might lead themselves, think about whether they're suppressing their emotions, think about why they think that's not important in their roles, in their businesses, their lives, and of course, you know, with or without titles, leaders with or without titles. So we've covered an awful lot of topics there. At risk, is there anything that you wanted to talk about or mention that I haven't asked you about or that has popped into your head as we wrap up?
I feel really inspired by this conversation. And just to follow the comment you made earlier, you can't plan conversations, like especially these sorts of conversations. You know, it's again, what winging it is to me, which is not in a bad sense, but I see winging it as a good thing, which is going with the flow, trusting your instincts, your experiences. And that's how I like having conversations like this. It's been a lot of fun being on here.
Yeah, same. It's been great. And I hope everyone else enjoys listening in, as I say. It's always like listening in. When I listen to podcasts, I feel like I'm part of it, you know, that we're all around a table and we're talking. So anyone that's still listening, thank you for listening. And thank you for considering this and finding the space, really, because I'm sure there's something in this podcast that will have helped you. So leadership onwards and upwards. Well, thank you so much for your time. And where can people connect with you?
Brilliant. Thank you. Well, firstly, thanks for having me, Teresa. I love being on here.
So and, welcome.
Where people can find me is I'm very active on, well, not so much Facebook anymore, but through LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. Active a little bit on Facebook, but also through my website, raghuparkash.com.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes anyway. Any links that you have, I will put them in there. And so do connect with him. And if you want to connect with me, again, it's just as easy to connect with me if you want to talk about life, being on the podcast, coaching, or any personal or business development. Then you can find me on all the socials, actually, so take your pick. So anyway, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your week, and what a wonderful way to start Monday.
You can read Coach Magazine for free online every quarter. Just subscribe at coach-magazine.com and receive it direct to your inbox. You can order print copies, book a directory listing, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Instagram.